Welcome to What the Paper Said, in which I, Patrick Crozier, skim through the Times from 100 years ago, read some of the articles, and comment on the ones I find interesting. In this episode, the week ending the 1st of July 1923, a correspondent has doubts about the Versailles Treaty, another correspondent has doubts about prohibition, and yet another correspondent has absolutely no doubts about the impact of Irish independence on Irish loyalists. It's a bad thing. But first, the headlines. The Labour Party are having their annual conference in London, in which they are at pains to deny that they are communists. And in fact, they've gone to the lengths of making it very clear that that Walter Newbold, the guy who has been elected as a communist, I've mentioned him a couple of times, is not going to be joining the Labour Party anytime soon, or any time at all, for that matter. To celebrate the conference, a couple of Labour MPs have managed to get themselves chucked out of the House of Commons, named as it is. The incident in question, a chap called James Maxson. Now, James Maxson is one of these people who's a bit of a legend in the Labour movement, largely because he never got into any sort of power, and thus never sullied himself in that way. Anyway, he claimed that the withdrawal of free school milk from children was tantamount to murder, and he repeated that a few times in the House of Commons, and the Speaker eventually decided to chuck him out. I must confess, I found this a little bit interesting. As a child, I don't know what it's like for listeners, but as a child in the 70s, I can remember mid-morning a crate of small bottles of milk and straws would appear in the classroom, and well, we'd have some milk. Now, I had thought this was something that dated back to the 1930s, but obviously it would appear, at least in some parts of the country, that it dated back before then. I also thought, or if you listen to Margaret Thatcher's detractors, that milk had been withdrawn in the early 1970s. Well, it was certainly there in the late 1970s. I say that, and then I think, well, hang about, the Tories lost the election, or lost power in 1974. I'm pretty sure milk was there all the time. That's my memory, but then again, I was very young at the time, so who knows. There is yet another outbreak of smallpox, and the Wimbledon tennis tournament has begun. In other news, Lord Montague of Bewley, the sort of one-man champion of the motorist, has argued that horses should be banned in London, which I think would be a bit of a blow for anyone intending to be having a coronation. Although it does occur to me, I mean, his main argument is that horses are slow, and I can think of another form of transport which is awfully slow and gets in the way of cars. Perhaps also ought to be banned. You may have heard the phrase, you can't get the staff, as in domestic staff. I believe this goes back to the early 1920s. The government has been holding an inquiry. To cut a long story short, for a lot of women, given a choice between cooking and cleaning all day or claiming unemployment benefit, they'd rather claim the benefit. There was a little item in the In Brief section, and this was about a man being heavily fined for smoking in a projection room, which seems a very specific offence. Now, but I think it's justified, or, well, I say that as a libertarian who doesn't believe in many laws at all, but I think the justification is that in those days, films were highly flammable. I think they're made out of some sort of nitrate, which I think is the same stuff they make out, make fertilizer out of, which is the same stuff you can make bombs out of. So, anyway, he it's a dangerous activity, and he's been heavily fined. In benighted foreign parts, a British passenger liner has shown up in New York Harbour. Now, this is not an unusual occurrence, but down in the hold, there is a lot of alcohol under a British customs seal. Now, I'm not quite sure what the significance of a British customs seal is, but the US authorities don't think it has any significance at all as far as they're concerned, and they have said that if you bring alcohol into the United States, even under seal, then that will constitute an offence. So they're prosecuting away, or at least have seized the alcohol. Elsewhere, President Harding is conducting a tour in the West. A bit of bad news there. One of the people coming on the tour with him, a member of the Republican National Committee, has got himself killed. He went on a little jaunt in a car with a few others, and the car went down a ravine. Let's just hope that's not a harbinger of anything. In Germany, a murder has been committed in Parchim. Parchim is in northeast Germany, as is North Germany, as was. Now, this is reasonably well known, although not very well known to me. According to the Times, a 23-year-old soldier has been murdered, and there are four people in custody. According to Wikipedia, well, he's not a soldier and he's not 23. He's a teacher and he's 63. But more to the point, suspects, and indeed people who will later be convicted, include the future commandant of Auschwitz concentration camp and Hitler's future private secretary, i.e. Martin Bormann. And also there's been an upsurge of fascist activity in Italy. You'd have thought with them being in the government they wouldn't need that, but they decided to start beating up their political opponents and smashing up their offices. It is now 4 years since the signing of the Versailles Treaty, and this gives the Times, or more accurately one of its correspondents, the opportunity to take stock. This is from Thursday the 28th of June. The antagonism of these two dominating personalities, he means Woodrow Wilson, the US President, and Georges Clemenceau, the Prime Minister of France, gave to the final instrument a dual character. On the one hand was the covenant for the settlement of international differences by peaceful methods, and the openly expressed hope that Germany would soon be accepted as a member of the League. On the other hand were a number of retributive clauses designed to keep Germany under perpetual surveillance. Such were, for instance, Articles 43, forbidding Germany ever to hold army manoeuvres within 50 kilometres of the Rhine, and 115, forbidding her to fortify Heligoland. I must confess I had never heard of these two. He goes on. In other respects, too, the principles which the Allies had proclaimed to be one for mankind were in practice applied only to the victorious countries and not to the vanquished. The principle of self-determination so widely advertised was later refused to Austria at the instance of France when she sought to attach herself to Germany. This is the banning of the Anschluss, as I was taught in school. And it's quite true. For a while, Austria called itself, was it Austria-Germany? I think that's what it called itself, or maybe German-Austria. I think it was Austria-Germany. Let's have a look. Well, it's German-Austria, according to Wikipedia. He goes on. The truth is that the balance of the whole treaty was seriously upset by the withdrawal of the United States from European affairs. The process which began when Wilson's influence in council waned has grown ever since, and the nationalist possibilities of its terms have been exploited to the utmost by France. It is impossible to avoid a short reference to the question of French security against aggression, because a separate treaty on the subject was signed on the same day, June 28, 1919, complementary to the main treaty. By it, Britain and the United States undertook to go immediately to the assistance of France in the event of any unprovoked movement of aggression being made against her by Germany. The treaty was never ratified by the American Senate, and therefore, according to a specific provision, lapsed also in regard to this country. Interesting in that it is an early example of what we now call, what was it, Clause 5 of the NATO Treaty. Was it Clause 15? Oh, it could be the Article 5 of the NATO Treaty. Also, I suppose it's worth pointing out that, of course, as it happened, France wasn't attacked in 1939. It was France and Britain who jointly declared war on Germany. Still, it makes its point about the absence of America. It would certainly have been useful in 1940. Another correspondent took a look at prohibition in America 3 years on. On Friday, he wrote an article stating the case against prohibition, and on Saturday, an article in favour. This is from Friday the 29th of June. The attempt to change overnight the habits and customs of a large number of the American people has been so far a failure in all the large industrial areas of the country. It has meant the transfer of the liquor trade from honest and responsible hands to those of unscrupulous malefactors. It has let loose upon the country quantities beyond estimate of adulterated and deleterious liquor. It has encouraged in official life a degree of hypocrisy and corruption deplorable to contemplate. It has hitherto failed entirely to appeal to the conscience of moral sense of a great number of what Mr. Taft, a former U.S. president, calls well-to-do and intelligent people, and as a consequence has provoked in them and in others taking pattern from them a disrespect for law whose consequences thoughtful Americans regard with dismay. It has arranged state against federal government, as in the recent refusal of New York to cooperate with the central authorities in enforcement. I've mentioned that in previous episodes. And finally, unless the machinery of the law is to be operated with honesty, efficiency, and courage, it can only perpetuate and exacerbate these evils. I was just wondering, can the same things be said of the current prohibitions, prohibitions plural, that we have at the moment on opium, cocaine, and cannabis? He talks about the transfer of the liquor trade from the honest to the unscrupulous. Well, that's undoubtedly true. It let loose adulterated and deleterious liquor. Well, yes, we have adulterated and deleterious liquor. As Alexei Sale once said, Stoke Newington cocaine was 9/5 Harpic. Has it encouraged in official life a degree of hypocrisy and corruption? I don't think it's corrupt in the UK, although in the US, I mean, the whole of the movie Serpico, which was circa 1973, is about corruption in the police due to drugs. But I think there is a certain degree of hypocrisy about it. Certainly, an awful lot of comedians make jokes about taking drugs, let's put it like that. And has it encouraged a disrespect for the law? Maybe, maybe not. I'm not so sure about that one. On Saturday the 30th, the correspondent made the case for prohibition. I have to confess, although the article is the same length as the one against prohibition, it's awfully thin. I have tried to pick out the best, but there isn't much there. This is the best I can find. He says this: figures which are offered as showing the decline of drunkenness, the growth of the habit of thrift, the increase in industrial productivity, would be more impressive if they were more authoritative, and if, in all cases, they could be shown to bear an immediate relation to prohibition. Well, that's the best he's got. He also quotes the President, Warren Harding. The day is unlikely to come, he said, when the 18th Amendment, that's the one on prohibition, will be repealed. famous last words, as they say. Oops, I shouldn't have said that. He goes on to say, I mean, the correspondent this is, goes on to say that prohibition had been growing for some time, and that the states of Kansas and Maine were the first to introduce it. On Tuesday, the 26th of June, there is an article about the situation of Southern Irish loyalists. No community in Ireland has been more sorely tried by the events of the last 10 years than the Southern loyalists. Now, when we say loyalists in the Irish context nowadays, we mean terrorists. That's not what he means. He just means people who are loyal to the crown. He goes on. A strikingly large proportion of them served in the British Army and Navy during the war. Their contribution was relatively greater than that of Orange Ulster, and the losses were proportionately heavy. Then came the Republican movement, during which any Irishman known to have or suspected of having aided the British authorities was liable to attack. Some of these loyalists, including not a few Catholic ex-servicemen, were killed. Others were driven from their homes by threats, or had to suffer damage, pillage, and sometimes destruction of their property. Now, I have something of a personal connection with this. My grandmother lived most of her life in Monaghan, and if you don't know where Monaghan is, it's just south of the border. It was also just east and west of the border. And she was a Protestant. Now, Protestant and British are not, they're not synonyms for each other, but certainly in 1912, when the Ulster Covenant came about, this was a thing that every British person in Ulster was supposed to sign or was asked to sign. Certainly large numbers of my family, I could find one great-grandfather and two great-aunts who signed it. So my grandmother's a bit too young at the time. So she came from a loyalist family. But were any of them killed? No. Were any of them driven from their homes? No. Were any of them threatened in any way? Not to the best of my knowledge. Although Protestants did have a inferior position in the Republic. As my mother said, you know, you knew there was no point in trying to apply for the civil service or the post office. You'd never get it. But certainly, I believe these sorts of events were more a southern and a western thing, a thing that happened in Cork and Kerry. But as far as I'm aware, not in Monaghan. Although I am aware of a family who was burnt out in the 1970s Troubles. And I did once ask my grandmother about this, and she was aware of family that was burnt out at the time in the 1920s. So I don't know what to make of that, to be absolutely brutal honest. Certainly as part of my family's memory, my family's history, it's not there, but it may well be in others. Anyway, that's all for this week. I aim to have something up next week, but I promise nothing.